Monday, November 25th, 1963, there were three funerals. One, attended by heads of state and broadcast across the country and in other portions of the world. One, attended by hundreds of police officers and members of a shaken city. And then one, where the attendance was so low, members of the news media had to serve as pallbearers. Those were the funerals of President Kennedy, Officer Tippit, and accused killer of both, Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm Eric Bushman. This is the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. Lee Oswald, prime suspect in the assassination, is dead. No trial. So what now? Well, a news conference first, called by Dallas County District Attorney Henry Wade.
The purpose of this news conference is to detail some of the evidence against Oswald for the assassination of the president. This evidence was gathered largely by the Dallas police, who did an excellent job on this with the help of some of the federal agencies. And I'm going through the evidence piece by piece for you. Number one, as some of this you will already know, some of it you won't, I don't think.
Wade going into detail of what would at that point be presented to a jury in a Dallas County courtroom.
We have a number of witnesses that saw the person with the gun on the sixth floor of the bookstore building, the window detailing the window where he was looking out. Inside this window, the police found a row of books, cases, boxes, hiding someone sitting in the window from people on the same floor looking in. On the window was some boxes where in the little circle around the window by the bookcases, some boxes where apparently the person was sitting because he was seen from that particular window.
Wade goes into detail about a palm print lifted from one of the boxes and the shells that were found on the floor. Three shells, says Wade. Also, the rifle that was found on the opposite side of the same floor near the stairs. The floor, by the way, basically it's one massive room. No hallways, no offices, just an open warehouse space with random stacks of boxes all over the place.
The gun was hidden on this same floor behind some boxes and some bookcases. It, as I think you know, has been identified as having been purchased last March by the Oswald from a mail order house through an assumed name named Heidel, mailed to a post office box here in Dallas. On his person was a pocketbook. In his pocketbook was an identification card with the same name and post office box on it.
Wade then details Oswald leaving work. Oswald was stopped by one of the first police officers to enter the depository, but was let go when one of Oswald's bosses told the officer Oswald was an employee. Oswald then is said to have boarded a bus. Wade says Oswald spoke to a woman on the bus, verified by witness statements, then gets off the bus, which is stuck in traffic and actually headed back toward Dealey Plaza, and then takes a cab the rest of the way home to his rooming house on Beckley in Oak Cliff. Then he changes his clothes and leaves quickly, then blocks away.
As he left, three witnesses saw a police officer, Officer Tippit, motion to him or say something to him. He walked up to the car. Officer Tippit stepped out of the car and started around it. He shot him three times and killed him.
Then Wade says Oswald ran from the scene, was seen emptying the empty shells in a vacant lot, and fled. Then a witness sees Oswald go into the Texas Theater blocks away, and Dallas police respond.
An officer of the Dallas police spotted him and asked him to come out. He struck at the officer, put the gun against his head, and snapped it, but the bullet did not go off. We have the snapped bullet there. Officer subdued him at that time.
Was that an attempt suicide, sir?
Against the officer's head.
That was the evidence gathered within the first 3 days after the assassination. Now I'd like to introduce two people who I plan to include plenty of in this series. These are two men who have dedicated their lives to the subject, and I've had the pleasure of sitting down with them on numerous occasions over the last several years. The former longtime curator of the sixth floor museum at Dealey Plaza, Gary Mack.
The problem with Lee Harvey Oswald is that his personal life was failure after failure after failure. And we all know about events where a guy will walk into the restaurant with a gun and just start killing people, and no one saw it coming, no one understood why he did it, but yet there's something in his personal life that triggered such an action. Maybe that's the answer to Lee Harvey Oswald.
And author, photographic expert, and former consultant to the House Select Committee on Assassinations, Robert Groden.
Who really killed President Kennedy? Not Lee Harvey Oswald. That's the simplest answer.
Gary Mack explains that while evidence points to Oswald, what is lacking is a motive. Why would Oswald have done this if he did it? Well, remember how Oswald went to work on the morning of the assassination with co-worker Buell Frazier? Well, that was actually out of character, because normally Frazier would take Oswald to his wife in Irving on Fridays, not Thursdays, for the weekend. This time it was a day early. Oswald rented a rooming house close to downtown in Oak Cliff. He had not been living with his wife Marina, as Mack explains.
They were separated for various reasons, but and the exact circumstances aren't really known, but in, I guess a fair explanation would be his wife despised him, not because of him personally, but because of his failures. He was a guy who had big dreams, but no accomplishments. And Oswald went home a night early. You have to understand in the context, Oswald went to work at the book depository weeks before the Kennedy motorcade had even been planned. And the information was given to the news media Monday night. The assassination was on Friday. It was in the news media and all the newspapers and radio and television the next day, Tuesday. So somewhere between Tuesday morning and Thursday afternoon, when Oswald asked for a ride out to Irving a day earlier than normal, Oswald decided to do something. He tried to make up with his wife, Marina. One of the things he promised her, which is just, when you think about it, how goofy is this? He promised to find a new apartment for them, and, get this, he would buy her a washing machine. Now, there are better ways to win a woman's heart than offer a washing machine. Marina rejected him yet again. So when Oswald woke up the next morning and left to go to work, he left virtually all his money, which is about $170, which is like $900 or so today. He left all his money and his wedding ring on the dresser. That's a man who's not coming back.
What about Oswald's actions immediately following the assassination? He was not present during a roll call. Actually, according to Mack, he was one of two people not present, but they had accounted for where the second person was. And Oswald said to the news media questioning him at police headquarters that weekend that he was in the building at the time of the assassination.
He was somewhere in the building. He admitted that, and it's on film where you can hear him saying that. He was inside the building when it happened. So he walks out the front door within 3 minutes. Now, there are police cars all over the place, lights and sirens blaring, people crying and wailing and running around. I mean, there are huge crowds out there. Normal people would have stopped to say, hey, what's going on out here? Normal people would have gone to their supervisor or coworker to say, what's going on out here? Are we supposed to keep working or are we excused for the day? He didn't do anything like that. He just walked away. And he got on a bus that he knew was coming right back to the scene. Now, it was the bus that would have eventually taken him to near his rooming house in Oak Cliff. The bus got stuck in traffic, so he got off and took a taxi. He gave the taxi driver the wrong address. And what actually happened was, in riding in the cab back a block or two past his rooming house, that gave him the opportunity to look and see if the cops were there already. That's speculation, we don't know, but why would you give a cab driver the wrong address? He knew where he lived. So there's a whole series of peculiar things that innocent people just do not do.
The other side argues Oswald was set up. He was a patsy, just like Oswald claimed he was when he was moved in front of reporters between his arrest and his death. Robert Groden has made the argument for years.
The CIA, the FBI, for whatever reason, whether they were involved in the plot or whether they just were involved in the cover-up, from the very, very beginning, lied to us. It's not that they were mistaken. It's not that they believed the wrong thing. They lied to us. They knew they were lying to us.
With the amount of evidence to suggest Oswald killed the president, what other evidence is there to suggest that maybe he didn't? Well, from which direction did the shots come from?
What they won't deal with is the medical evidence. Every single doctor in Dallas, every one, not one, not two, all of them, nearly 30 of them, all said the president was shot from the right front and the exit wound was in the rear of his head.
President Kennedy was always in front of the Texas School Book Depository during the time frame of the assassination, meaning all of Oswald's shots would have had to come from behind the limousine. Questions came pretty quickly about possible shots from on top of the grassy knoll, perhaps even more specifically from behind the picket fence on the knoll. Grodin spoke with many of the doctors who treated President Kennedy, who describe a wound in the back of the head, indicating a possible headshot from the front and right side, exiting from the rear.
It sounds kind of dry, and perhaps you know, who wants to hear doctors' interviews, but when we realize that all except maybe five or six of them, they're all dead now, and this is the only time they ever spoke out. Nobody ever asked them before or since. And here they are, they're preserved, what they had to say. But not just the doctors and the nurses, but FBI agents that were dealing with the president that were there. Frank O'Neill, for instance, Francis O'Neill, he was there and he saw the wounds on the president and he spoke out to me. I was the first interview he ever granted. He said that the rear of the head was just gone. It was just blasted out. Well, crying out loud. I mean, here's a government guy who is honest enough to tell the truth. Well, the government didn't want to hear what he had to say, so they never asked him.
And the suspect in the killing of both President Kennedy and Officer Tippit never stood trial, never given a platform to mount a defense.
Lee Harvey Oswald was denied his civil rights. He was murdered by the system. And I don't mean just incompetence that they let this nightclub owner down a ramp by mistake and he shot the man who was accused of shooting the president. That was no accident. That was made to happen. And anyone who believes that it was just happenstance or circumstance instead of enemy action is absolutely nuts. You know, how do you take the most important witness, most important prisoner in the world, and allow him to be executed on live television? How does that happen? It can't happen unless you make it happen.
Back to Gary Mack, taking a look at Oswald's actions afterward, this time when he was arrested.
When he was arrested, he had a gun on him, and the cops found that the gun matched the shells that were picked up at the scene of the Tippit shooting. I mean, they knew that very quickly, and he would lie about certain things, a whole series of things, where he wasn't telling the truth about innocent or things that weren't particularly important. So they knew from their previous experience with, you know, questioning suspects that this guy not only is hiding something, but he's deliberately lying. You know, innocent people don't do that.
There's something Gary said there that has always been one of those weird little, is it a myth, is it not, what really is the truth when it comes to something? The cops matched the shells from the Tippit shooting to Oswald. But floating out there has been a claim that the markings on the shells do not exist. Police Detective Jim Lavelle wanted to clear that up when I spoke to him in the early 2000s.
The truth is the officers got caught in that deal and they thought they had made a mistake by not marking them. It wasn't necessary from my standpoint as a homicide officer for them to mark the shells itself. All they needed to do was mark the envelope they were in and date it. And we have handled thousands of cases over the years that way. They go through, the lab takes them out of that envelope, runs a test on them, puts it back in the same envelope and writes on his information the date that he took them and so forth. And there's no use mutilating the shells in any way by scratching on them. Mm-hmm. So they didn't do it, but they got caught in that and they thought they'd made a mistake. And I know that both two officers said they marked them, and I know that good and well that they didn't, because it just wasn't our policy to do so. And it wasn't necessary, to be exact.
Now let's briefly revisit a topic that I brought up when FBI agent Jim Hostey questioned Oswald in police custody about that trip to Mexico City the FBI learned about shortly before the assassination. Again, talking merely possible motives if Oswald was the killer. Hostie shared with me his theory after learning new information long after the assassination that involves Oswald's trip to Mexico City and also former Cuban leader Fidel Castro.
We have Castro telling one of our undercover people that Oswald came into their embassy and offered to kill Kennedy. You know, Castro got upset with the CIA trying to get him, and he came out and made a statement to the press that two people can play this game, or words to that effect. Also, the fact that Oswald then went out and met with a KGB agent who was, that was his department, assassinations. I guess that's known too. A lot of people just didn't want to believe that. And the government didn't want to pursue that field. Maybe it's true, maybe it isn't true. But they made no attempt to follow up on it.
So you're under the impression that Oswald did do it, in a sense, voluntarily doing it to help Fidel Castro.
Right. We don't know if Oswald was told to do it, or if he just volunteered to do it, and they said, "Oh, get out of here, you're crazy nut."
One thing, of course, to keep in mind is if any of that is true, Oswald would have had no clue that, one, he would soon be employed at the Texas School Book Depository, and two, President Kennedy would be coming to town riding in an open motorcade right underneath his building. Regardless, the whole Mexico City matter is something that Hostie says his superiors did not want him poking around in, perhaps because of the sensitive nature involving former Cuban leader Fidel Castro and the aftermath of the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was only a year and a month before the assassination, and the ongoing tense relationship between Cuba and the United States. Hostie gives two examples, not in chronological order.
3 years later, I was talking with some agents, and one of them had said he'd been out drinking beer one night with a guy who was in the headquarters, and they got talking about it. And he said, here Oswald was in touch with somebody in the Russian embassy. It was Department 13, and nothing was done about it. He was decrying the big cover-up, you know. And this guy told me like he thought I knew. And that's when I found out. Here, I'm the case agent. And another thing, Alan Belmont, the number three man who sent me up to talk to Oswald, he made a remark when I was testifying for the Warren Commission, and I said this communication that came in the day of the assassination was sent out the day before. It was about they'd uncovered some vital information regarding Oswald being in touch with the Russian embassy just at that time of the assassination. But we found out about it the day before, and they were notifying us, and it just come in to our office. And so I said to the staff guy that was interviewing me, well, that would be this communication of the 21st. And Belmont said, damn it, I told him not to let you see that.
All of that aside, now comes quite the predicament. Dallas police had a suspect in a murder of international consequence, and because of the suspect's own death, there won't be a trial. The FBI decides it wants all the available evidence so they can come up with their own conclusion. But pressure is mounting on President Lyndon Johnson that not even that will be enough. So now, one board of inquiry, one group of establishment respected individuals, one commission will evaluate the report and sign off on it. Will that give the finality that President Johnson and the American people need? Well, to quote a wise old philosopher, good luck with that. I'm Eric Bushman. This is the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas.